episode 12 of the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast with Sohail Inayatullah and Elena Hiltunen.
Welcome to the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan. I am the president of Haku Global. This is a space for globally minded experts to dialogue about the future of leadership with a focus on the key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? From this conversation, innovative wisdom, practical tools, and actionable insights emerge to help future-ready leaders thrive in an uncertain, complex, and exponentially changing world. Let's jump in to the dialogue.
Aloha, and welcome to this episode of the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. Today, I'm joined by Sohail Inayatullah and Elena Hiltunen. Sohail Inayatullah is the current chair in future studies at UNESCO and USIM. He's a professor at Tamkang University in Taiwan and the University of Melbourne in Australia. He is passionate about helping individuals and organizations develop their alternatives and preferred futures. He completed his PhD at the Political Science Department at the University of Hawaii. Elena Hiltunen is the futurist and CEO at What's Next Consulting. She has an extensive experience in anticipating and innovating futures. Elena has written 11 books, including Foresight in Innovation, How Companies Are Coping with the Future, and a children's book about computational thinking. Elena received her Doctorate of Science in Future Studies and Organizational Learning from Aalto University in Helsinki, Finland. I met Sohail for the first time a couple of years ago during his once-a-year trip to Hawaii. I found him to be very insightful with a unique perspective on futures and change. Interestingly, 10 years ago, Sohail was one of Elena's thesis advisors, and by random chance, they meet again on this Flowcast. Both Sohail and Elena have been in professional foresight field for many years. What I really like about this dialogue was the contrast between Sohail's discussion around the power of individual metaphors and Elena's interest in collective or crowdsourced foresight. As you will see in the dialogue, we need to integrate both into a coherent whole to really understand the future. In this dialogue, we discuss the importance of slowing down to speed up, mindfulness and foresight, crowdsourced foresight, the power of metaphor to inspire change, the importance of discovering the cognitive diversity of weak signals, why foresight is useless without the power to act on it, how to look at megatrends, why anticipation equals facts plus fantasy, and how changing the end of an old story changes the future. Let's listen. Aloha, Sohail and Elena. Thank you both for joining me today on this episode. Excited to have you here to talk about futures intelligent leadership. And as always, I want to start with this key question of how can leadership be more intelligent about futures given this climate of uncertainty, complexity, and exponential change in the world? I'd love to have Sohail start.
Well, for me, one of the metaphors I heard that I like a lot was with my colleague, Rob Burke. We teach a course for CEOs and heads of strategy at Melbourne Business School for the last 20 years or so. And he calls it slowing down to speed up. And so that's one of the key criteria for success in terms of futures thinking and foresight is really meditation and mindfulness. That every day we find a way to slow down, go into a deep meditative state. And that, I would say, is among the most important things to practice and do as the world changes so much, because that helps me go to a space of long-term, slowing down, figuring out what's most important. So I would say that's the first criteria.
Great, that's a good starting point. And Elena, from your perspective, how do you answer the question?
Well, I would say that the leaders of the company and organization should really listen to their employees, because there is so many eyes and ears in the organizations, and if this knowledge isn't utilized, so then they are losing so much information. I think that the leadership and the managers are very busy in their own work and thinking about the company's success in the future. that they don't necessarily have the time and time to listen what is happening in all over the organization. So what I believe very much is this is based on my past and experience in weak signals and crowdsourcing the futures. I really believe in this word crowdsourcing the futures. And so I think that this futures information should be collected from all levels of the organization. And this information should be transferred to the leadership, leaders and managers. And they should use this information to make better choices about the future of organization.
Yeah, I think there's some definitely relationship here between that being able to slow down enough to actually listen to everyone, and then speeding up once you've kind of got the right pulse. And Sohail, with your work, how are you, you know, aside from meditation, mindfulness, how else are you helping leaders slow down?
Well, a lot of my work is on narrative. So very much what you might call narrative futures or narrative foresight. Mm-hmm. So the number of people who say, okay, the world has changed dramatically. What do I do? So option one is, of course, the slowing down. And option two is futures literacy, being able to read the signals of change. And as Alina wisely says, reading the signals of change is more successful if I'm including more people in this reading process. Now, the third part for me is in the leadership dimension is my story about myself and the world still relevant? So I had one senior economist in a large international organization. And so we do this CLA of the self process. What's my problem? What are the selves in conflict? What's the origin worldview? What's the current metaphor? And what's the new metaphor? And how do I get support from that? So as we went through the layers for him, his kind of litany was getting bored at his job. The system was doing the same thing over and over. Worldview, I think he went back to high school. He was bored at high school. But then we asked him, so what's your metaphor of your work? And he said, golden handcuffs. And the reason why it was golden, he said, every time he comes up with an innovation, they go great. They don't know how to implement because there's no futures literacy innovation culture, but they just increase his salary. And his salary is already so high as an economist in a special organization. So in a way, he's happy. His self that says he's Asian, security is important, feed the family, be a good breadwinner, that self is happy. Then the self that wants to have purpose to make a difference is miserable. So he said his narrative was golden handcuffs. And then we said, okay, that's today. Where do you really wish to be? And then it started, well, actually, he wants to use his skill set in the organization to be more entrepreneurially, So then the new metaphor went from golden handcuffs to the Midas touch. So instead of giving advice to national governments on how to engage in innovation, he becomes the innovator. He moves to having the Midas touch, so he creates wealth. So one is talking the story. Now he is in his new narrative, he's living the story.
That's great. So like using a lot of this narrative storytelling and metaphor to help people. And it sounds like shift into kind of a future self or a new state of being. Is that kind of a way to think about it?
Yeah, it's definitely. So here's the new self and you see, how does that feel? But then we go further because storytelling or narrative without connection to the real world doesn't work. So question two is then, what systemic support skills do you need to make the Midas touch into reality? Because if he leaves the organization, then part of him will be nervous, right? Can I make it in the market world? So then he needs to think, okay, what skill sets do I need to know from going from an advisor to actually being someone who innovates himself? So that becomes then the learning journey. And then at that stage, I run personal scenarios with them. So scenario one, you stay at the organization. Tell me what it feels like in 5 years. I have money, but my immune system is wrecked. And I feel sick because I have no purpose. So then scenario two is, okay, you would leave and create this new organization or NGO or think tank. Now what does it feel like? So then I feel excited, but I'm a bit anxious and afraid. So then we develop a third scenario. Is there a possibility you can do both? Can you, you know, go to the president of that organization and say, look, I want to find a way to be more innovative in the organization. Can I go from the advisor to now head of a center for innovation? I said, well, how does that feel? He goes, okay, that feels good. I'm innovating and I have some safety. Mm-hmm. So the scenario structure that we gain from futures helps people figure out, here are four options. The narrative part is, which is a better feeling story? Which story better connects with the future I wish for? Mm.
That's great. And Alina, with your work, are you seeing kind of this idea of narrative and story, and how is that playing out within like crowdsourcing and what leaders are seeing across their organization?
Well, I think it's very important to do these kind of like futures stories and have the courage to think about different kind of alternatives in the future. When it comes to this crowdsourcing of futures, what I am and looking at these weak signals, I have to say that I'm a very tool-oriented type of futurist. I think that there should be like these concrete tools for organizations to use. Use for crowdsourcing the futures. So one of the things I've been working, well, it was about 10 years ago, but still I think it's a pioneer organization that used this crowdsourcing tool for collecting weak signals in organization. And in this organization, we were using this tool called TrendWiki, which is actually now it's transferred, it's called Louhin. This tool, and every person in the organization had the possibility to very easily to collect these weak signals and insert them to the tool. And one of the key thing was that the people in the organization, so every people in the organization, in different level in the organization, not only the highest management, but everybody in the organization, even the secretaries and so on, they had the responsibility to collect two weak signals every month and insert to the tool what are the signals of change that they are seeing in their work. And this organization was luckily a very global organization, so we had people working all over the world, and we were collecting these signals and inserting these signals to the futures tool. And then I was working in this organization in the futurist team, and our task was to make sense out of all of these weak signals. And then we were like clustering these weak signals, and then we were giving like list that these are the things that we are seeing that are emerging based on the weak signals that you are using. And at the I think the best part of that process was when the management and the senior management was using these trends when they were making scenarios of the future and testing their own strategy. So this is what I very much believe, that like everybody in the organization should be attached to the futures process. The anticipation of the future should be seen everywhere in the organization. It's not only the task of the managers, but it's task of everybody. And this information was then used in very strategic processes in the organization by the CEO and his management team. So that was like, I was very happy about that process, because for me as a futurist, it was a dream come true. Unfortunately, this company or organization, FinPro, doesn't exist anymore. It's called now Business Finland. And I don't know how they are doing there, because I'm not working there anymore. But I think that this is something, it was very pioneer way to look at the future in all levels of the organization. And that I think is very important, because many times when I've been working in different kind of like management level in different organizations, I have to say that the managers are many times they are very similar type of persons. They are males, they are like in their 50s, and they have very similar type how to see the world. So I think it's very important to have in the futures process different kind of people from different age groups, different gender, different nationalities, different phases of their lives. Some people have children, some people are taking care of their old parents, and so some people are single. And this, I think, it's very important when you come to think about the future and get the information about the future.
It's interesting, as you're talking, I'm really curious to hear from Sohail on how we take this like cognitive diversity that Alina's talking about, and these signals, these weak signals that are coming in from many different people throughout the organization, along with the leaders' metaphors and narratives, and how do we start to create like either collaborative or shared visions of the future or shared narratives?
So, I mean, my experience is when I have organizations engaged in weak signals, emerging issues analysis, that's a really important step and phase. The next challenge for me is ensuring there's a worldview or deep culture that can make sense of this. So one large law enforcement organization I was working with, so they were about to start a foresight program. I said, well, before you start it, you have to make sure the information you find, discover, create can be enacted. How do we do that? So one is making sure, just as Alina said, there's crowdsource, everyone's active, all the detectives are part of this. But where does the information go and how can it be read? So when we went to the narrative level, their metaphor was a toothless tiger. So our organization, important as it seems to others, we see it as a toothless tiger. We can't really act on it. So then collecting data about the future works for a while, then everyone gives up because nothing happens. There's no success story of here's how we detected an early threat. Here's how we prevented something bad from happening. Here's how we created something good to happen. So I said, okay, if right now you're a toothless tiger, what would be a better narrative? And so they came up with a guard dog. Guard dog is trusted by the community. Guard dog is an early warning system. And so then if your metaphor is a guard dog, now when the information comes in, you know where it comes from, community, you know how to use it to create greater trust. So this is the crucial part of the work as well. With one large international organization headquartered in Europe, they said they would ask their doctors, their respondents all over the world, experts, give us the latest data on food safety, on food health, etc. And they said, but when they asked those questions, because the experts had data on the past, but no literacy on the future, they would get blank pages. People wouldn't know how to answer it. But then we went back in and I said, okay, so what's your current narrative? They said, our current narrative is we're an old, blind, crippled elephant. And then one of the scientists, and this was a huge, huge moment for me, when the scientist stood up and said, actually, the elephant is dead. We're too busy to notice. And this became very powerful, that organizations that are threatened by an uncertain future, they have a number of choices. One, as Alina suggested, as you're suggesting, the Leadership Act, how is the world changing? Let's inspire us. Let's get on top of it. Option two, let's double down and give people fake work. So this group, they said, okay, what do you really need to do? They said, we need to become like an octopus. The octopus brain is everywhere. Our brain can't just be the headquarters. You know, it's a beautiful European capital, but our headquarters have to be everywhere. So information, now we create a narrative where information or the brain of the organization is global in our researchers, experts everywhere. Octopus is quick, is agile, reacts to global issues, and knows how to use that reaction to proaction to better strategies. So in my work, I try to make sure the weak signal assessment, emerging issues analysis, has a framework for the information to make sense. Otherwise, people get the data and they still don't know what to do with it. So for 15 years, I've been working with Biosecurity Australia, Department of Agriculture. We've all been talking about the next pandemic. Mm-hmm. This is not a surprise on Corona today. Mm. The exact place it emerges, how it emerges, the date, none of that is predictable. Mm. But no one in the biosecurity area is particularly surprised by this. Mm-hmm. My colleague, Dr. Peter Black, has been saying for a decade, look, we have to create buffer zones between us and wildlife. We can't have these wet markets. We can't be eating these type of foods. Mm. So we know this, but now it's an actual global crisis that leads to really banning this. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Merely having information about the future is not enough. It's making sure there's systems of knowledge that everyone knows about and gets to act on. And it has to be a deep cultural frame, a narrative which in the new information makes sense to people. They can read it and act on it.
Mm. I think, Sohail, you had very good point about this corona and pandemics thing, that this is something that has been known to people and to experts, for example. And this is something that it's only a matter of time when this corona was happening, and because of eating these wild animals, and this is causing the threat. And the latest book that I was writing, it was published last autumn. It was about megatrends. Mm. And, you know, everybody knows megatrends. We are talking about climate change. We are talking about population explosion. We are talking about aging of population, lacking of natural resources, digitalization, and so on. But what I noticed is that everybody knows this in general level, but you have to really dig deep inside of these mega trends also. What is the meaning of them? And what is the deeper meaning? And for example, I have been talking very much before about population aging, which is something that is happening already today. But then there is certain different aspects in this population change. For example, the amount of young people in, for example, India, there is about 600 million people that are younger than 25 years old in India, which is a huge amount of people. So it's not only that the population is aging all over the world, but in some places, the challenge is the huge amount of younger population. Mm. And now, like, I would say that the last 6 months I have been lecturing about the mega trends, and I've been noticing that even that in organizations, people are noticing things, mega trends in the general level. They are not digging too deep into these mega trends and see, for example, these threats that Sohail was talking about, this coronavirus, that these are the already known information, but somehow it's forgotten when companies and organizations are doing their own business. And usually what I have noticed is that they are doing their own business in very short time perspective. They are very busy of doing their today's business. Mm. And then even ignoring the information that is already known for everybody, but they don't have time to focus on this kind of information and look at the threats. And that is even what I would say, that is simple, but because we have that information. But then in many organizations, they do not have time to focus on this information and to think about how these, for example, megatrends are affecting to their business in the future, in the near future. And in a way, I think that is very challenging, because when we think about the futures tools and megatrends, trends, weak signals, for example, weak signals are something, well, I think it's important to collect them. But if you are an organization that is ignoring the megatrends, then there's no worth of starting to look at the weak signals, because at first you have to know what is happening, what are the megatrends, and focus on them. And only after that, you should start to think that what are the new emerging trends that could affect to us, and you could see through looking at the weak signals.
So, with your work, how can leadership, I guess, use narrative or whatever tools you use to like understand megatrends and make them relevant within their organizations?
So option one is you have a group of futures people collecting outlier data that report to you. So if you're a prime minister, you could have a center for futures. Many countries do that. Option two is you just have a network. Instead of a formal institutional structure, you have a network of people who are reporting, here's the new data, here's the possibilities, here's the outliers. Now, option three, of course, what we're suggesting is for the CEO or chair of the board, herself or himself, to develop those skill sets as well. So they're thinking through, and this is the hardest for all of us, is because we base our decisions on the past. And we're more likely to remember that past if there's emotional trauma linked to it. So the bad memory creates the strategy for the future. So then in that sense, how do I unpack that? So that's with the mindfulness meditation. But also in our scenario work, we say, okay, you're going back from what you knew. Let's call that scenario one. We'll just do it the way we always did it, right? What we're calling being Kodak. It worked, but it doesn't work. So then we say, what's scenario two? And then, so we develop the scenario practice to get them to think about alternatives. And the other part of that, of course, to figure out in what ways is the future I'm imagining, is it a used future? Used future is a practice that we continue that no longer works, but we keep on doing it. So I was presenting to one board, they were in charge of basically asking, should we use ICT, information communication technology, Skype, et cetera, so people can work from home. And as we did this, we gamed it, called the CLA game, causal analysis game. It became very clear that the real issue was not the cost efficiency from working from home. The real issue was, I'm the CEO, I've worked harder than anyone, I'm the smartest, I don't trust employees to work from home. They're just gonna goof off. So the issue was not the economic cost benefit, which is very clear, let's work from home or work 2 days from home, 3 days from the office. But the issue was, I don't trust them. So then merely delivering a report about optimizing profits from working differently would not work, because the head of the board is using his or her used future story about someone yelling at him when he was 3-5 years older in third grade that they're not working enough hard enough, to use it as a template to understand the future. So I first have to work with them to get them to shift. Well, is it really laziness that's the issue, or what's going on here? So this is where the inner work and the outer work is crucial. Here's evidence about working differently. Here's scenarios about working differently. And how do I have to rethink myself to optimize foresight?
Any follow-up thoughts on that, Alina?
I have this one thought that when Soha was talking about these narratives of the future, I think it's very good and interesting stories. And I can actually see these kind of like cultural differences between me and Soha. Soha is talking about these dying elephants and toothless tigers. And I love it. I love these metaphors. And I would say that in Finland, you would never hear about these kind of metaphors. And it's sad, because I think that with the future, you should have more imagination and more techniques that would widen your own thinking. And I'm writing these kind of like books about future, but what I also do is I write fairy tale books for children. And now I'm writing about fairy tale books about with my friend who is actually professor in space physics, and she's very well known professor, but we are writing a fairy tale book about for children, and we try to encourage children to and especially girls to use their imagination and test things like to be a little bit like scientists. But what I like there is the idea of fairy tales. And I think that this should be applied to organizations too. And to think about future fairy tales, what could happen in the future and imagining the different kind of futures. In my latest book, I had this like formula. I'm an engineer. that is my background, and I really like formulas. And I made this formula that future anticipation equals facts plus imagination. And the facts is something that it's about trends and mega trends and weak signals. And this is something that we should have the facts there when we start to think about the future. We don't have the facts about the future because we can't travel to future and check the facts. We have only facts about today and the history, but we should have them. And then to think about the future, we also need the imagination. We need the fairy tales, and we can use the fairy tales and the facts to create like positive futures, and we can create negative futures, but I prefer that everybody is creating these positive futures. But I think that maybe this is very much like Finnish organizational culture, that we really much rely on the facts. Maybe it's a little bit like Western type of thinking, that facts are the things that we should base everything. Of course, they are very important, but what we should have more is this imagination and ability to create fairy tales, nice fairy tales about the future, and then start to achieve them. I don't know, Sohail, have you been talking to high management level people that you should think about fairy tales? Fairy tales is maybe something that, come on, we are in serious business, don't talk about fairy tales. But I think this is, yeah.
No, this is important what you're saying. So there's two parts. One, just connecting, you know, Ivana Milovic, my partner at metafuture.org, she has a book called Mojne Priče, where they rewrote Serbian fairy tales and changed the endings.
Oh, that's
then
beautiful.
They ran workshops with young kids and say, here's how we've changed the stories. You change the stories as well. So it's not always Cinderella waiting for the prince. They develop their own new skill sets and change reality. So I think, I mean, that's fantastic. You're doing the same thing. That's part one. Part two, what I notice is the CEO level and the board level, prime minister level, they all understand narrative. In fact, no one gets elected at that level without being a master of story. When you go to the MBA level, middle management, senior management, they have a harder time. They've learned the way you succeed is to play the quantitative game and meet the measures that have been assigned them, their KPIs. So there, it takes them longer to understand narrative. Now, the third part of this for me is I still try to always link the new story with quantitative measures. So my first job was teaching statistics. So I'm always concerned, if I have a new story, how do I measure that? It can't be the new story doesn't achieve results, because then it's just a fairy tale. We want new stories to optimize the future they wish to create. So one group, their metaphor was bludgeoned by the present. No time for strategy, no time for visioning, no time for scenarios, day-to-day business operations. They changed their story to a flock of eagles, and they've reported since then, over the few years, their projects, their profits, everything has increased. Why? Because they're looking differently, they're seeing differently, they have a different lens, they can see opportunity where before they only saw problems. So totally agreeing with Elena, we want to link the narrative with quantitative measures. However, the next part of foresight is, am I measuring the future correctly? So there's an amazing CLA game we played at Bellagio, and the headline was, someone said, futurist wins Nobel. And we deconstructed that, and then someone said, wait a second, futures is a community, inclusive, participatory dimension. Why would one futurist win the Nobel? So they changed the headline to, a group of futurists win the Nobel. And then as we unpacked it, someone else said, wait a second, this is still in the old paradigm. The new headline would be, group of futurists reinvent global award to have quadruple measurements. So prosperity plus social inclusion plus Gaia plus spirit. So we're don't want to, so our role in organizations at every level, especially at the leadership level, you can play the game of optimizing within today's game. You can play the game of living the past and hope it works out for you. We're saying it won't. Or you can play a more advanced game or a different game where you change the story and you change the measurement. And now you're not surfing the waves of uncertainty. You're creating a new future. You're leapfrogging over other people. That's the act of leadership, the act that transforms.
That's great insight. It's as you're talking about that, it's interesting to think for either one of you to answer is, do you think there's a disconnect then between like that CEO board level leadership that understands narrative and that middle management MBA level that wants that data? They've been taught a different story, and there's maybe a disconnect in their communication.
The disconnect is intriguing. I remember at one, we have this 4-day course with Melbourne Business School, my colleague Rob Burke, he was a CFO, right? Mm-hmm. And he was fighting with Rob the entire 4 days. And then Rob said, wait a second, do you want to be a better CFO or have you taken this course to become a CEO? And the minute he said that, everything changed. He said, oh my God, I'm using my knowledge to defend the world I don't want. I should use my knowledge to create the future I want, which is to become a CEO. And then Rob said, well, then, sir, you need different skills. Yes, to quantitative skills. You need emotional skill set. You need spiritual skill set. You need a visioning skill set. You have to change. So the MBA game is, well, I need to play the game so I succeed within this as you move up. Wait a second. I don't have the skill set for the next level. And this is the same with countries, right? Countries are the number of countries I've worked with. What should be our national economic strategy? Well, copy paste works until AI or machines can copy paste better than you. Then you have to play the innovation game. The innovation games requires moving from manufacturing to knowledge intensive economy. It's a different game. It's a different worldview. It's a different skill set. So then you have to jump. So then our role is, how do I get someone or a country or organization to jump when we're nervous and afraid? And so then it becomes, what's the best implementation strategy? Is it small steps? Is it low-hanging fruit? Is it action learning? Is it go where the energy is? Is it get a little bit of money to start a project process? All those work. And I always try to find out, where's the organization? Where's the leader? What's the next step that makes sense within their story? And we push them forward.
That's great. And I'll go ahead, Alina.
I really enjoy Sohail talking about the creating the future. And this is also something that I'm really fan of. I think that everybody should understand that when we are thinking about the future, there is like three levels of futures thinking. This is something that I'm always talking to my audience, is that there are three levels of futures thinking. One is that you have to anticipate what is happening in the future. And this is about the facts plus imagination. So it's making scenarios of the future, what could happen. But then there are other things too that you should realize. That one thing is that we are the ones that can create the future. And it's not only anticipating what is happening and what should we do about that, but it's also to taking the responsibility that we are the ones that are creating the future. And many times I hear these arguments that, okay, but we are a very small company and we are located in Finland and this is a small country and so on. And then I'm saying that, but look at some people like Gandhi, for example. Look at the Swede that I'm really true fan of, Greta Thunberg, who has started to creating a better future by starting a climate strike. She was just sitting in front of the Parliament House and so on, and that's how it all started. So she really, she saw that there is this kind of future that she don't want to live in, and she started to create a new future, and it was really worth what she is doing, because everybody now in the world know who is Greta Thunberg and what is her message. And she really has the true message. And maybe the message thing is the third thing that I really try to encourage to my audience, is that future is, it's about innovating the future, but it's also about communicating about the future options, that what we could have in the future. And sometimes people need to have the push from the future and need to have the messages from the future. And I really encourage different organizations to visualize, make a visual images what could happen in the future, and then show these images to their shareholders and say that, what do you think about this kind of future? We have created, we have thought about that future could be like this. What is your idea about, is this something that you would like to have in the future? Or is it something that you would really like to avoid in the future? Should we go to that future? And I think that there are some companies that are very good in visualizing and communicating the future. One of these companies is Airbus, who has made this future of air travel, and they have very nice visualizations of that. But one other industry is car manufacturers that are having their showcase cars in car fairs. And this is our imagination about future of traveling and future of cars. What do you think about that?
You know, we're running out of time here, so I'd love to just kind of wrap up. And the way I like to do it is just have you each just kind of share your final thoughts after today's discussion. And we'll love to start with Sohail.
Final thought.
not forever, just for today.
Not forever. No, I look at, going to Greta, right? So she made a decision. And I think she's focused on her vision and creating that. Mm-hmm. And I think what's inspiring is, you know, youth and willing to engage with people much more powerful than her. So this is at a global level. And now there's incredible resistance or fight back from the empire, if you will. And her latest response was this, you know, in terms of fight back against her. And she just said, look how desperate they're becoming. So in terms of popular language, she still has managed to control her own narrative. And I think that's what we try to do ourselves in our own lives and lives we work with. We want people to decolonize the future they've been given, and then try to make within a zone of control stories and steps to create the future they wish for. And that means, you know, sometimes getting rid of stuff. What's the baggage I'm carrying that doesn't work? So there's very much an inner process. And then how do I connect and communicate with others to create the future we want? Now, globally, we're in this process, right? When things are unstable, uncertain, dynamic, complex, then we can get leaders who can act, who can make a difference. When things are stable, there's not much we can do. So the zone of control, we often feel it's small, but I think in an unstable, dynamic system, our zone of influence actually is much greater than we think. And that's what I would want to focus on, figure out what's my zone of control, and then double it.
Well, my final words here is, I have been talking very much about the future and but I want to tell a little bit background story here about my and Sohail's relationship. Sohail was the opponent of my PhD work when I was doing my PhD work about weak signals in organizational futures learning. And I'm a true fan of Sohail. So this has been a very honoring experience for me to be in the same podcast that my idol Sohail. So this is great for me. This comes from my heart. But the last words when it comes to the future from me is that, listen to the young people. it's said that the young people are the future, and it's like a little bit like old saying, but that is the truth. They have really different kind of mindset. That when it comes to the organization and work life of the future, for example, here in Finland, you can really see that the young people are seeing, looking when they go to work, that they want to have the meaning of the work. They want to do something good for the world. Mm. And this is different from my times when I was young. We wanted to have the career and money and so on. But this is now, it has changed really. I want to make the meaning better world now. but you can see that's also the change in the young people. And this, I think, is very important for the organizations to think about also in the future. They need to make a better world for everybody, not only for them, and not to make the money, but to make the better world.
Hmm. Great way to end. And final question, this is probably the most difficult thing to consider today, is what is one word you would like to leave for future intelligent leaders? And I'll start with Sohail, one word.
One word?
Yeah.
I mean, it's now cliche because every article has it, but for me, it would have to be mindful.
Mindful, great.
And Lena? For me, I would say one word, which is very difficult to say, is create.
Mindfully create, we got the two words.
Perfect. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
That is good. Hey, that's actually a really nice combination.
Yeah.
There's quite a few episodes where that's kind of happened, where the words really fit together well.
Yeah.
So thank you both for being here on the episode today. I really appreciate your time, your insights, and your wisdom. Thank you for sharing that with the audience.
Thanks, Tyler.
Yes, and thank you for having the opportunity to be here. Okay, bye.
Bye, thanks, Lena. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more Futures Intelligent Leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.